Welcome back to the Live In Podcast. My name is Kristen Blazek, and this is a special edition of our podcast because last time we did this podcast, it was international. So it was the first time we did the Live In Podcast international. And then, so then now we've brought you from international to domestic. So now you're here now. So just really quickly, hello, Molly. How are you?
I'm fine.
Do you introduce yourself again?
Thank you for always having me with you.
Yeah, always. Introduce yourself for everyone.
Molly Schnoek. I'm with the Center for Community Planning and Development, and Kristen's tag-along.
Yeah, that's right. My tag-along. And we're joined today, again, by our two guests. So, Nick, do you want to start?
Sure. You want me to introduce myself?
I would like you to introduce yourself.
Okay, very good. Yeah.
Yes.
Nick Zingali. I'm an associate professor at, what do I say?
It depends on when this goes out. It'll go out before July 1st, so we can still call it the Live In College.
So we have already talked about 2.0 in a previous
We've already
podcast.
Talked about 2.0.
So you can say both.
I guess we would say that the former Live In College of Urban Affairs, soon to be the Live In School of Urban Affairs.
Right. So if you're listening to the podcast before July 1st of 2022, it's pre-merger. If you're listening after July 1st of 2022, it is post-merger. And so we are, so depending on when you're listening, I would say.
Yep.
So either way, you're an associate professor. So.
That's right. That hasn't changed, at least for now.
That hasn't changed. And then who else am I joined by?
Sasha Drezgic from Faculty of Economics and Business, University of Rijeka, and also Head of Department for Smart and Sustainable Cities. No, wait. Center for support to Smart and Sustainable Cities of University of Rijeka.
Awesome.
Are we allowed to say you're dean yet?
I'm newly elected dean from, and I will be on duty from 1st of October.
Right. Congratulations.
This year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. So we've talked about before about smart cities. So what are we going to be talking about today to continue that conversation?
So today is about something we're calling Society 5.0. And you can think of Society 5.0 as the work that's being done right now at the human-machine interface that will have an impact on human experiences in the future and even to the extent of human existence, the way that we conceive of ourselves existing in the future. Lots of big thoughts, and I'm happy to explain more.
I would love to know more about it. I just am like, are we going to end up in the Matrix? Is that, I think that's the question I have right now. Are we going to end up in the Matrix?
We may already be in the Matrix.
Not what Kristen wanted to hear.
Not what I wanted to hear.
So let me contextualize it a little bit better for the audience. And so we think of, why do we call it Society 5.0? So you can think of society, major transitions in society happening over four phases. Mm-hmm. The first phase being Society 1.0, and this we would say is the hunter-gatherer society.
Okay.
And what you'll see in each one of these transitions, technology plays a major role to transition a society from one to the next. So Society 1.0, hunter-gatherers use technology in form of weapons and gathering of grains to be able to do things more efficiently and more effectively. That gave way to planting crops and the agrarian society, which is Society 2.0. Mm-hmm. And that had an effect on the types of technologies that were used to elevate the ability to feed large amounts of people and change society in a way where we can have dense populations living together. We didn't necessarily have to be nomadic and move around areas to where the food was at. So it structurally changed society and the technologies that were associated with that. So the technologies for agrarian spilled over into other technologies that were about community building and society building, as well as governmental structures, as well as political structures, early political structures. That gave way to Society 3.0, which was the move back from the rural environments and the agricultural environments into the cities and the manufacturing environment, and one many of us are familiar with today, and that is the machining industry, the assembly line industry, to be able to mass produce things, the dense living in cities that was created out of that, and then also the technologies that started to form as a part of that. We now live in society 4.0, which is, as most of us know, the information society, and this is the computational society. This is where massive amounts of data are able to be transferred between agencies, between people, in ways that we couldn't imagine before. We have information and access to information and data like we didn't have before. And again, it is changing the way that we operate, how we know things. Society 5.0 is a society in which we are going to, the line between humans and machines and reality and non-reality will become increasingly blurred. And the blurry of that line will have an impact on the way that we exist or the way that we understand our existence. So I'll give you a real simple example of this and that many people are familiar with. Facebook's metaverse is not just about entering a virtual world or virtual environment to have a short-term experience, but the potential for a metaverse to be created in equivalent to a real world or a real city that people could inhabit most of the time and have full multisensory experience within that city is on the horizon. And so we could virtually have online cities that we could inhabit for most of our days that will run parallel to our real cities.
I'm gonna have to take that one in for a second. That's
accompanied by parallel problems.
Yeah.
That we still experience and have not yet solved for.
There, you know, I think what you're trying to get after is you've got equity problems, you've got access problems, you've got crime-related issues, and those have been there since, you know, those have transferred from Society One to where we're at today. Those are human problems, and those same human problems will exist in Society 5.0, but they'll exist in a different way, and they'll take a different phase of how they show themselves and how we'll experience those.
So how soon, because looking at technology, right, if we're talking about like just the 4.0, it's between the time where we first started getting, machine that can do large bits of data to now is such a short amount of time versus the time before we had it up into that point. How soon will we hit 5.0, and is it gonna just keep going at this, you know, breakneck pace where we're not able to keep up with, you know, the crimes that would be in a society 5.0.
So I don't think there's going to be a switch, mm-hmm. right, where we know definitively that 4.0 is over and 5.0 has begun. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, you know, we still do hunting and gathering today. I mean, mm-hmm. people hunt deer, right? But they do it for in a different context. Maybe not so much in a survival mode, but in a sports person mode or something along those lines. So there's always remnants of the previous society that inhabit the society that we're moving into. And we're never quite sure, depending on where you inhabit those remnants, if you are operating from that mindset of an old society versus a new society. But one of the triggers in my mind is when the society begins to be shaped in such a way that becomes difficult to opt out of. In other words, the structures of the society have been created to such an extent that you no longer can go back or comfortably back to how it was before, right? So when I think about that switch, like when might we begin to see that type of thing happening? I think we're still, you know, 20, 30 years away from that occurring. Mm-hmm. However, remnants are already in place. NASA already hologrammed a surgeon onto the International Space Station just last month. Mm. They had everything but physical touch. In fact, they did a hologrammic handshake in space, right? I've already mentioned Facebook's metaverse, mm-hmm. but we have virtual programming and artificial intelligence right. that is moving forward at a breakneck speed. One of the activities that we're involved with, Cleveland State's involved with right now with Case Western Reserve University is the Human Fusions Initiative. The Human Fusions Initiative, we just sent tactile sensation touch from a human being in Cleveland, Ohio, to the end of a robotic hand in at the UCLA and their robotics lab, where the person in Cleveland had tactile experience of what that robot was touching in UCLA. This is the movement of multisensory transfer that we talk about, which is the sensation of touch happening over the airways. We do sight and sound already, we take it for granted. Mm-hmm. But at some point, we're gonna be doing tactile sensation. At some point, we're gonna be doing olfactory mm-hmm. sensation, right? It is gonna move to the level where we're going to feel what we refer to as future presence or telepresence, mm-hmm. as though we are somewhere else than we are exist in reality.
So those next 20, 30 years, though, are a bridge period. So it's going from this whole umbrella of we're going to be living in a virtual city and virtual place. What happens in the interim, right? We started talking last time about smart cities. Where are we on that, and what does that look like in this 20, 30-year transition?
Yeah, so smart cities, it's astonishing to say this, because our last podcast was on smart cities, and it was, what, a year ago?
It was in 2020.
2020,
because okay. We started talking about smart cities and the fact that we're seeing the inequities. Just, it was, like, glaring in 2020, because the people who had money had the internet, and the students, specifically in education, the students that were in lower income households didn't have internet, and yet they were expected to virtually be at school. And so we saw this like difference, like how soon can we get Wi-Fi for everyone? How soon can we get smart cities for everyone? Because it was just, I want to say it was like April of 2020. I swear.
It's about 2 years ago. Yeah. But the state of Ohio just announced this month the statewide broadband program, right? So even then that was a 2 year lag.
Yeah. It just feels so yesterday.
It does. It's all blurred.
And what I mean by this is that we were talking about smart and sensible cities and everything that goes along with that, right? Privacy-related issues, access issues, equity issues, the cybersecurity that is associated. Like, these things are very much problems that we're contending with right now in society 4.0. But the labs and the work and the funding that the National Science Foundation and private enterprise is doing to move towards society 5.0 is happening at a breakneck speed. And that speed is almost making society 4.0 and the smart and sensible city seem like something that is yesterday, that we're already contending with, like we were contending with old industry. Even though we never really accomplished it, right. It's really strange. It's like the minds have raced ahead to be thinking about the next phase and the next rendition of technology infusing into our lives. But this is happening very quickly and at a pace that we didn't address it or solve it well in 4.0. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at our elections right now, and we're gearing up for this again, this misinformation. Imagine misinformation where you can go inhabit an entire and having a virtual experience. So now, not just something I'm reading, but I can go have a virtual political experience mm-hmm. that will convince me of some other reality that could shape some way that I might vote or conceive of something in the real world.
But it is another reality. But that's a U.S. perspective. So how does Europe think about these things? What is the difference? Is it the same, or are there other concerns? Yeah.
I would like to address a couple of points, actually, following up to what Nick said. I really think that globally, if you look at the international scene, we are living in all these societies still. And it is interesting to see that basically, if you look at the smart cities and also with other factors, which are, for example, large cities, second tier cities, and then rural areas, you basically see the difference between those actually communities in applying new technologies, knowledge, everything else. So basically, definitely only sort of major cities make breakthroughs in terms of new technologies. So I would say all other entities are still living in a sort of different societies. Also, what I noticed, I remember last time when I was visiting here, we were together the Case Western, and I had to say I was impressed by application of new technology. We were using VR glasses, looking at holograms and those kind of things. And I thought, you know, this is kind of edge of technology. But then I was actually surprised when I came back to Europe, to Croatia, and I found out actually when visiting some company. I was telling them about my experience, and they said, oh yeah, we already have this for half year and we are doing that. Mm-hmm. So basically this company was using VR glasses to cooperate with some machinery in distant countries. So I was actually shocked, and actually what I realized actually that in my opinion public sector is lagging, so private sector is actually on the edge of technology basically in all developed countries, and the public sector has problems. So and then we come up to the idea of transitioning towards society 5.0, and the problem that of the society 4.0, where the smart city, smart and sensible cities were kind of cornerstone, we never got there. So what we had a sort of a, let's say, piloting. We had a dominance of technology. We had a lot of technology, but nobody actually find a way to use it, to go through all these legal, financial, budgetary, regulative procedures to incorporate all these technologies within the cities. And now new technology is coming, and the question is like whether the difference will actually even increase between, again, private sector and public sector. So actually what I see, we have same problems internationally. What I see here in US, I see same outcomes like in Europe and other groups of countries, even though the setup is different, regulation is different, procedures are different, but nobody actually manages to incorporate this. Since we are really cooperating in University of Rijeka, we are actually cooperating with a lot of companies and also multinational companies like Ericsson and so on. What we actually see when discussing with engineers, they're saying we don't have problems with technology. We have problems with, we need economists, we need planners, we need law schools to resolve all these limitations for the application of technology. And this is basically something global. And that's why I think all the things that we're actually doing together have really high value, because we are able to compare use of similar technologies in a different circumstances, and I think we can draw really good examples and conclusions about how to resolve these issues, because we have globally a number of examples of good practices, but we have problems in scaling up. So I think really that our network, especially, I would say, boosted with the fact that we are very happy that our university became a new affiliate member of Public Interest Technologies University Network, where we cooperate together with Cleveland State University, where we want to expand precisely this kind of strength that we have in network to sort of broaden up our views and also find particular solutions which might be available globally.
Okay.
Very good. I got a question to you.
What? Yeah, go for it. I have a lot of questions. It's all kind of like sinking in, like the whole...
Starting to?
Yeah, like what to look for in the future, because the only thing I can think of is in Back to the Future, they had flying cars, and we thought by 2015 we'd have flying cars, right? And this is almost like saying, well, we're not even going to worry about flying cars, because we'll just virtually experience flying cars in this society that we'll be in. But I guess my question is, so while we'll have to have jobs that will support, right, this virtual space, what will happen? Will we still need the same types of jobs that we have now to support basic infrastructure that we'll still have? Like, we'll still need roads. We'll still need all these things. So how do these two correspond with each other?
So this, the question here that falls under, you know, the future of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does the future of work even look like?
Right.
And, it, you know, if you imagine, if I could take you on, you know, out into the future a bit, it would not be surprising to me that we have either avatars or robotic workers that are doing most of the mundane type of work. The likely the interface that's going to be occurring is what we're referring to as an avatar interface. And, you know, we're so used to looking at a worker from a human body, right? I happen to be fortunate to be on a panel in Santa Clara just a month ago with some researchers, neuroscience researchers, that were looking at this. And that the purpose of that panel was to look at the transfer of touch and embodiment and how we think about embodiment and transfer of touch. And one of the researchers there said, you know, one of the mistakes that we might make is that when we talk about touch, we're always thinking about it in terms of like a hand. And she then proceeded to show that almost like an Inspector Gadget type of thing, where different appendages get put on for different types of needs. So she had this one that looked like a tentacle that kind of unwound and was able to reach like 10 or 12 feet away, where you can have touch at the end of your hand to be able to do these things. So you really have to get out of like the confines of the human body to begin to think about how things might get constructed with the future of work and what might potentially be possible to be able to do that type of work. Because the human body in some ways allows us to do really nifty things with our fingers and our hands and those types of things, something that we can't even get remotely close to recreating right now. We're a long way from that with robotics. But at the same time, our body can be limited. You know, there's a researcher that is a dually amputee from below his knee at MIT. And he happens to be in a neuroscientist and looking at prosthetics. And so he obviously was interested in, you know, what can I do with this? Well, he was a rock climber, a mountain climber.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things he did is with his prosthetic legs is he just extended them by several inches because it gave him an advantage to be able to climb the rock.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He now stands when he does conferences on this like 3 or 4 inches tall because he wants to be taller.
Mm-hmm.
They still look like legs,
right?
But the thing that we can begin imagining is, what would you do if you had a third arm and you could figure out a way to operate that and you could put that into a work environment? What does it look like if you inhabit an avatar that's at a machine that is able to work with appendages or features that were not so human-based but looked differently and could operate differently? So the skill sets will be really unique there of people that have this ability to transfer their abilities, their human abilities, into animated abilities in different ways to perform at very high levels. I see a future of work where people aren't employees of organizations anymore. They're all free contractors, and they go out there and they may work for 2 days under this contract working this machine, or they may work for 3 days doing this type of thing, and they may decide, you know what, I'm going to go take a virtual vacation in the Bahamas, and I'll be gone for, you know, 2 weeks, you know, and I'm meeting a bunch of my friends there, right? And they'll be involved in that particular type of an experience. I don't think the future of work looks anything like it looks today. I think it will be completely disrupted. The lines will be completely blurred between what humans do and what robots do, and in fact, there'll be a lot more in between where humans interfacing with robots and other types of machines will be taking place. This is much further into the future for us to be able to get there, but we're already seeing elements of this today, right? We are already being to the point where companies right now, I know of right now, are asking for robotic arms that could have tactile sensation at the end of those robotic arms so that they can do more detailed work, assembly line work, or different type of work on the assembly lines so that people could inhabit this. These are requests being made already.
Mm-hmm.
This is not unique.
I would add to that maybe a couple of interesting points. The question like is what kind of industries will be replaced by mm-hmm. by robots and machine and you know AI. And I think traditionally we were actually thinking about kind of jobs in the industry, automotive industry, which was already in place. But interestingly, if I compare U.S. and Europe, maybe I'm wrong, but here I see kind of abundant sector of hospitality with a lot of restaurants, hotels, and which were basically. I don't see problems within the workforce. For a difference in Europe, we have huge shortages of workforce in these industries, in these actually services. And I think already a couple of months ago in Croatia, there's a first restaurant which where actually robot does the cooking and serving. So the thing is, I think these kind of changes will be also pressured from the demographics, from the kind of fundamentals. If you don't have you know, labor market, then you are actually forced to do something about that. And even though I think as human beings we don't like actually to be served by robots at this point, we might be forced to actually to do that. And that will be kind of transition of the major, especially for some economies which are, for example, which are kind of focused on tourism. It will be major shift of workforce, and the question is what these people will do after that. Also, I was thinking about the involvement of AI. So there are already proofs that AI can solve some problems that human mind can even not imagine. So, you know, when we think about jobs in consultancy, in research, you know, maybe professors will be replaced. Maybe, you know, kind of will be obsolete in research. We will be able to teach. But, you know, research will be transferred to AI. So many interesting questions in terms of kind of these sectors and industries actually come out from new technologies.
So let me add to that a few things on this, right? Because Sasha brought up a bunch of really good points. But one thing that I want to stress in this is that, you know, when you asked me initially about Society 5.0, I was intentional and I said, it will expand mm-hmm. human experience and existence. I think one of the things that people begin to think about is that the replacement of the human being within a societal structure. I don't know that I believe that, right? I still believe that the human being evolving over so many years into the society that we live in right now, that this will be another evolutionary movement for the human being, but I still think the human being will continue to be the human being, right? I think the role of the human being will be expanded through technology, much like technology has expanded what human beings have been capable of doing for a long period of time. I mean, I can't move at 55 miles an hour, but I can, that tech can be expanded when I hop into a technology I call an automobile, mm-hmm. right? And right. do that. Mm-hmm. I can't jump where I'm at right now and land on the moon,
right.
but my ability to do that can be expanded through technology.
Right.
So to me, this is the next evolution of this expansion that's taking mm-hmm. place. The concern I have with this is that much like these other transfers in society, it's the pace.
Mm-hmm.
These societal transfers happen much slower in the past. They're happening much quicker
yeah.
right now. I don't know that we're ready for them to be able to do this. Sasha brought up the point. I certainly don't think our governmental structures or societies are able to do this.
Right.
And right now, I don't know of a governmental agency
right.
that is thinking. They're still in Society 4.0 and thinking about how do we gather more data so that people mm-hmm. could get better access to healthcare, which is great.
Right.
I mean, we need that kind of stuff, right? But they're not thinking in terms of the fact that what happens if I have an entire market of healthcare enterprise that is facilitated in a way through virtual reality that I can't imagine today. How do we begin to set that up within our societies? That's part of why we created this certificate at Cleveland State University in Society 5.0 is we want to get the conversation going on this so that governmental agencies, private sectors, students are starting to think about this. We're not going to have all the answers. We're probably going to be raising many more questions than we are answers, but it's really about getting the dialogue and the conversations going so that these agencies and these institutions are already creating parts of their work or parts of their jobs that they currently have where they're beginning to address these types of applications that they may be facing on the horizon. In other words, it's surging the thinking forward, the dialogue forward before it's already upon us. At least that's our hope with our certificate.
Yeah, so we're going to be offering that. We're going to be offering that certificate. So we're going to be, how many other schools are doing this?
So we are, as Sasha mentioned, we're part of the Public Technology University Network, Public Interest Technology University Network. And that network as a whole is really about access to technologies and then access to information surrounding these technologies. We have done a scan of just about every university that's part of that network, and there's some really high-powered universities that are part of that network. We feel as though we are in a very, very small group of universities who are beginning to think along these lines of Society 5.0. So it's very early, as you can tell by even your skepticism that I see in your faces and your body language on this. Is this really going to come to pass? So there's a lot of people who are saying, how practical is this? Is this really just a waste of time to talk or think about this? I happen to think it's not. And I happen to think that there were crazies at one point in time when they said the computer will never be the computer that it is today. And there are people who said that there is, you know, that we should not waste our time with these computers.
I was told that I would never have a calculator on me at all times, so I had to learn the algebraic equations. Yep. And I would just like to point out to all my math teachers, I currently have a calculator on me.
My math teachers are very pleased by that.
So if I need to do any calculations, I have a calculator on me right now.
In fact, you have a calculator in the form of a cell phone or mobile phone that's on you that is more powerful than computer systems in the 1950s took up entire rooms and needed entire cooling systems to make sure they didn't overheat.
Yeah.
And you've got it in the palm of your hand and it's capable of doing
more. But it still requires me to interact with a human being and in other aspects of my life. And so part of the question is, you know I'm a skeptic. You and I have had many conversations about this. I'm one of your skeptics for different reasons, but in part because, you know, sort of the questions of what makes us human, right? And how we live out our lives. And also truly understanding what the physiological consequences are of this kind of technology, right? So we have yet to truly appreciate and understand what this can do to our evolutionary development and our brain chemistry, right? And our brain responses. And so, you know, in thinking about virtual places, you're talking about, well, add a third arm or recreate touch. And I'm thinking about the ability to recreate even the room we're in and all of the sensory information that human beings take in that you're unaware of, the temperature of the room, the smell, right? I mean, in all reality, human beings are animals, right? We live in the animal kingdom. And you pick up different chemical reactions in your environment, right? You smell different things. Can you recreate the smell of walking down the street? You were just in New Orleans.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on there, right? There's a lot of information you're getting, right? And so could you really recreate a virtual workspace or a virtual city with all of that information that without bashing anybody, right? There's imitation crab meat, still doesn't taste like crab, right? And we've been at that for a long time. Sell it in stores all over the place. So how good are we gonna really get creating aspects of reality that we don't have full appreciation for and what they do to us?
So Sasha mentioned that there is artificial intelligence that is operating at a scale that, you know, quite honestly, I can't comprehend myself. Mm-hmm. There's quantum computing that is occurring. My sense on this is that these types of abilities to create the next rendition, let's say, of imitation crab meat that is closer to reality, may not necessarily be something that human beings, you know, even work on. I think the technologies working with human beings will ultimately start to create these types of environments. One of my major concerns in this world, or in this society 5.0, and I think is a need in society 5.0, and we should be engaging in a conversation like this internationally, and that is, what does constitute humanity, or what constitute a human? Mm-hmm. Like, we almost need a constitution for humanity to be able to establish some guardrails on what's going on. What's going on? So the edge you're on right now, Molly, that you're talking about is really at this interface between what I think about in terms of artificial intelligence becoming artificial consciousness. That those are two different things. Mm-hmm. Artificial intelligence is about knowledge and the processing of information and being able to do that at ways in which you can create understandings and information. Artificial consciousness is the way that you experience, feel, and implicitly, mm-hmm, and tacitly organize yourself in the world. Right now, we are all conscious and aware of one another, mm-hmm, that are there. At least we think we're conscious and aware of one another that are there. But the issue of consciousness is a really interesting a conversation. There's a lot of philosophical, there's a major philosophical break with consciousness. And I'll give it to you this way. There was a lecturer that came into to Case Western. His name was Sylvester Johnson, and he gave a lecture on can robots experience pain? Mm-hmm. Okay, so is pain a sensation of consciousness? When I am under anesthetic, am I truly unconscious? Some people will say that you're not unconscious, that you're actually conscious, but you are also able to. You're not able to experience that pain in the same way. Your body may be experiencing pain, but you don't experience it in the same way. It's not really, it's part of what argument that he was making, but he made a much more profound argument that has stuck with me ever since. And that is, when we begin to assemble things, mm-hmm, that make a thing, no matter what that thing is, but specifically a thinking thing, mm-hmm, whether that be a thinking computer or a human being, right? Mm-hmm. Are we more than just assemblage of parts? Mm-hmm. Because if human beings are merely an assemblage of parts, then theoretically, we should be able to create other beings, and other beings could evolve to be very human-like, mm-hmm, on their own, to be able to experience things like love and pain, mm-hmm, and loss, and creativity and beauty. Mm-hmm. If we are nothing more than an evolving thing of material items, what makes us think that another evolving thing of material items can't evolve to be able to do that? Mm-hmm. If you disagree with that, mm-hmm, then you must confront that we are more than material things, that we live in an immaterial world. There's an immaterial part of us, mm-hmm, that Molly is getting after. Mm-hmm. This sense that we feel one another in, mm-hmm, in a unique way, the sense that maybe there is some subatomic force or spiritual force that lives in each one of us that, mm-hmm, we connect to, and we don't quite understand that with today's technology. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something more to our religious endeavors or our belief in spirituality that plays much more of a fundamental part to who we are that can't necessarily be transferred, mm-hmm, to a machine in the way that we think that it can be transferred to a machine. But I'll leave you with this, I'll leave this argument with this thought. If I am corresponding with Molly, and let's, mm-hmm, say Molly is a machine, mm-hmm, an Android that has been created with the most advanced technologies possible, and I can reach out and shake her hand. I can get a sense for who she is, but I'm a human being and she is a machine, but yet I experience her as a human being. The question in my mind is, does it really matter that she's not a human being?
And the question in my mind is, you think you're experiencing that as a human being. Are you really? And I don't think we understand truly what up here that does to us. Yeah. We think we can recreate that experience.
When people enter a virtual world and within 20 seconds feel like they're standing on top of a building and they have a difficult time distinguishing that they're not, that tells me that the human brain allows that transfer to happen a lot easier than we'd like to think.
To what extent do you know that you can measure accurately that the human brain hasn't not distinguished that in a different way?
I don't know if it's a matter of measuring.
The question is whether you would step up
on
the building.
Well, that's right.
Well, and,
that's right.
And also, that's a short duration that's been measured and looked at. Over longer periods of time, what does that do? And that hasn't been investigated yet either.
I think my reservations are from the fact that, number one, we don't know, right? And Hollywood has tried to guess, and it's never looked good.
Right.
Right? Like, The Matrix, it doesn't look like something. And something that they did say in The Matrix is, they're like, if you die in The Matrix, do you die in real life? Even though you know you're in The Matrix, you know, it was like coming over that battle of, which I didn't finish the last one.
Hard to get through.
But it's that idea of, if you die in the Matrix, do you die in real life? And all the other people did, right? So if they got shot by an agent in the Matrix, you died in real life. How much is that true? And then looking at the other, like, AI. So looking at the movie AI, or looking at Westworld, even though, you know, it's a tactile person, right? You're like, that's a person. You know, we see the fact that eventually they did evolve to say, no, stop doing this to me. I know you can erase this, but no, stop. We're not doing this anymore, right? And so it's that kind of, I think, fear that Hollywood has put into us so that's where mine comes from. It's like, oh, I don't want to live in the Matrix. That seemed terrible.
I would add, actually, to what you said, I would never fight the Matrix. This world looks much better than being plugged into this.
Being stuck in the 90s, though.
No, real world in Matrix was really bad.
Yeah. I know, but it's that idea that we started moving to that place, right? Because that's how the Matrix got started, is we started moving that place where we started, and then we said, oh, no, we're at a point of no return, and so we tried to fight back, and that's when we ended up being... But I don't want to be stuck in the 90s. Like, I love the 90s, but I don't want to be stuck in the 90s in, like, an eternal loop. Yeah.
But some of what you're talking about isn't just virtual places. I mean, we're stuck right now talking about virtual. It's the difference between being in the Matrix or being the $6 million man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of what you're talking about is the $6 million man, right? Can we build a new arm for somebody?
Yeah.
Right? And so... I don't want to get stuck in the not in my lifetime, my kids will be dealing with this issue also, right? What is more present to the issues we have to deal with now and in the next 10 years? And I say that in part because human beings are not really good at long-term planning or planning at all. And so, right, what do the next 10 years look like?
Right.
Yeah. So I would say the near term... most of the work right now is being done in, and unfortunately, I don't know if this is fair or not, but it's just where it's happening with the disability community.
Right.
That particular community lends themselves for prosthetic devices, for exoskeleton robotics. So most of the thinking and work that's being done right now is with that particular group. There is an individual that's part of the research study that I'm involved with the Human Fusions Initiative, who is on record in one of the videos that we did, where he is, he puts on his prosthetic hand. You could see it as a prosthetic hand. It doesn't look very human. Mm-hmm. And he says something like, I have sensation in this prosthetic hand. It's not the same sensation I have in my other hand, but it's sensation nonetheless, to the degree that I have gotten to the point where I accept it as my real hand. Okay, stage one. Right. I accept something attached to my body as embodied within me. Right. I think this is much more near term than we're thinking, where it won't feel exactly the same, but we'll be able to connect something to ourselves that feels very close to what it is that we had either missing or lost. But then we do something with that hand, right? We remove the prosthetic, and we put the prosthetic hand in another room, and the individual who has embedded sensors in his forearm that allows that prosthetic hand to work as mm-hmm. it's attached to his arm, mm-hmm. imagine now that that arm is no longer attached. It's in another room, and he is picking up balls, and he's shaking hands, and he's squeezing tubes of toothpaste, and he is doing that with his arm in the other room. Okay. He looks at that situation and he says, this is almost like I don't have a disability. Like, I now am better than a human. Mm-hmm. Like, I have abilities that other human beings don't have because of the technologies that's been afforded. I think that's our 10-year horizon, that mm-hmm. we'll be looking at that types of type of technology being used to send tactile sensation along with our video and our audio. I think tactile is the next frontier. I think within 10 years, we'll be seeing much more with transferring tactile sensation. A huge hurdle that we have to get beyond, that is a computer science problem. So any computer scientists folks that are out there, and many of them are working on this, and that is we have to figure out lag.
Yeah.
Lining up audio, video, and tactile is extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why people get sick in virtual worlds. They mm-hmm. experience virtual reality sickness. Mm-hmm. It's because of the misalignment of that.
Right.
But I do think once that is figured out, once that is lag is figured out and that stuff aligns and we have tactile sensation, that is going to be a groundbreaking of what's going on. There's one thing that I want to, a word or a language that I want to get out there that I want people thinking about, and I keep talking about the confluence of different technologies coming together. But the word I'm trying to get people to think about is what I'm referring to as silicarbon, the silicarbon future. And when I say silicarbon, it's not S-I-L-I, like silicone. Mm-hmm. It's silicarbon, S-Y, mm-hmm. okay, as in synthetic,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because I think that the future is going to be the confluence of three major types of technologies that we've mentioned here. Mm-hmm. But the silicarbon future is going to consist of multisensory transfer, advanced augmented and virtual reality worlds that we can multisensory transfer into, and then artificial intelligence working at a large scale and a massive scale that allows those virtual worlds to work and be created in different ways that will lead to the sensation of artificial consciousness and the way that we can kind of feel conscious in these types of worlds or experience these worlds. I think that silicarbon future will have a long a runway ahead of it. But over the next 10 years, the tactile portion of it, particularly within the disabled community, is going to be where most of the work is being done.
I think as long as we take it in steps, you know, it's a lot to take in of being like, in 50 years, this is what's going to happen. But yeah, taking it the steps, first step is, and I think that's a great step. I think it's a great first step. So
yeah.
I'm really excited. I am excited. It's just a lot to take in. You know, at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's a lot to take in. Thank you guys so much. This is just, thank you. It's really great. Thank you for coming on. It's nice to see you in person. I know we're talking virtual in this conversation, which is really strange because it's like, yay, you're here. But we're talking about the future of not being here, but feeling like we're here. So that's
next time I'll send a hologram.
Yes, next time. So we're just going to keep. So we yeah, next time you'll be here in a hologram.
Or only my hand.
Yeah. Just like Adam's family. Just yeah. Right, the hand just running around. All right. Well, thank you guys so, so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited for the new certificate of Society 5.0 that's going to be offered at CSU in the college, the School of Levin. And it's going to be really great. It's going to be, I'm really excited for it. So thank you, Molly. Thank you, you guys. And stay tuned for the next Levin podcast. And also like, subscribe, share if this is something that you want to hear more about. And we can always bring you guys on again, and then hologram next time. So thank you guys so much. And that's it.